other people have lived and loved. We've had as much of this world as you're going to get. Let's just be done with it. Let's be done with the agony of it. This is a revolutionary suicide. This is not a self-destructive suicide. So they're paying for this. They brought this upon us.
Cult, I love you, and I want you out of it and with Christ. But you're...
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Cultish Entering the Kingdom of the Cults. My name is Jeremiah Roberts, one of the co-hosts here. Super Sleuth Andrew had to go into a meeting, and so I'm going to be kind of running the ship. Well, mostly running the ship. I am going to be mostly handling, giving the handles to Dan Tate. You are back with us in studio. How are you doing, man?
Sir. Really good.
Good.
Really good. Excited for this next part. Really going to start getting into those juicy stories. I know we talked about the situations where I got guns pulled on me and mission presidents doing crazy stuff. So we're going to dive into all that.
Only in Florida.
Florida man.
The Florida missionary.
Yeah.
So... if you guys list, definitely, this is the part two of, we're focusing in on the missionary lessons, that this is the training that they go through whenever you see two people, typically in ties, in white shirts, knocking at your door, or sometimes you have sister missionaries too, who'll be knocking on your door as well. So we ended the last episode a little bit on a cliffhanger, because you had, at that time, it was the apostle Thomas Monson.
Wait, I had it wrong here. Thomas S. Monson was the prophet at the time.
Yes.
Russell M. Nielsen came and visited the mission because he knew that there were issues going on with the missionaries trying to deal with change.
Yes. And so it was what Nielsen said as an apostle, and he's the current prophet.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
What did he, when you were there in Florida, what did he say? Everyone's wanting to know.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to give you a little bit of context so it makes complete sense. Because another thing is we're talking about the culture of being a missionary, what it's like to be out in the field. And we kind of jumped straight into the topic of tithing for some reason. And there could be a lot of people saying like, well, why did we just jump into that? Mm-hmm. This is going to be why. And so especially coming from a missionary standpoint. So let me give you some context. So from the very beginning of my mission, I'll make this quick. So I've already talked to you about, you have companionships. You have a district leader over five different companionships, which are pairs of missionaries. Mm-hmm. You have the zone leader over the district leader, the APs over the zone leaders, and then the mission president over all of them. Now, the mission president serves for 3 years. Every missionary, 19 to 21, everybody else, regular missionaries to APs or assistants, serve for 2 years. So for the first year, I was with a year and 2 months, I was with one mission president who had a very specific method of evangelism. And then the second mission president was explicitly different. And so, you know, through these episodes, I don't know how many exactly we're going to cover, but right now we're going over the purpose of a missionary, because this is the first bullet point or chapter of Preach My Gospel, is what is my purpose as a missionary? And so these are the type of things that missionaries would normally study to help them feel more confident or prepared to go knock on doors. And so, you know, there's this aspect of what is my purpose as a missionary? Really what it talks about is that you're to be an ambassador or a representative of Jesus Christ to go and preach the gospel, preach the restored gospel, to let people know the truth of Joseph Smith, the Book of Mormon, all that kind of stuff you're probably already familiar with. So my first mission president was very numbers hungry. Mm. And what I mean by that is that, like what we already talked about in the first episode, that every missionary has a daily planner that they say, at 10 o'clock we're going here, 11 o'clock we're going there, 12 o'clock we're tracting, okay? At the very bottom right of those sections, every day you have a day set out. You have what's called daily goals. And every missionary the day before, because like I said, at night, from 9 to 10, mm-hmm. that's your next day's planning period.
Yeah.
You pray about, you know, Lord, please bless us to know where to go, who to reach, what to say. Then you do your planning session. You have your plan A planning, plan B, and then you pray about your goals. And so your goals could be, I want to find three people who are interested in the church today. I want to give one baptismal invite today, to invite somebody to be baptized. I want to find three people who will come to church this Sunday. And so you have goals like this. And so the reason why I'm saying this is that you have a mission president who prays and is basically told that he's inspired to come up with mission goals. So every companionship has goals in their area. The mission president comes up with what's called a baptismal goal for the entire area.
Mm-hmm.
And so that mission president might come out and say, we have a baptismal goal to baptize 1,040 people in the year of 2009. And so what every missionary is supposed to do is do everything they can to hit that goal.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we, you know, and everything is chartered, it's like, you know, we're in the first month of 2019, we have to hit at least this many baptisms each month to hit our goal. We're kind of low in January. We need to do something different in February. And so the mission starts to become this transactional doctrine where you're like, well, if I skip my 1 hour lunch break and rather take my break, go hit the streets, maybe God will see that I am sacrificing things for my temporal well-being and he will bless me spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a transaction. You're like bribing God to be better than he is, just like Dr. White says. And so there's little things like that all the time. Or there were times in this mission president's time that he was with me that he would allow certain things to happen to say, we're low on numbers this month, and so we need to discontinue writing our friends at home. Only write your family. It's just completely weird.
Yeah.
Sacrifice everything and only write the people that are important, and the Lord will bless you, and you'll produce more numbers. And so...
So almost like you're subtly punished a little bit?
Kind of. Yeah.
Okay.
Because, I mean, there was even this situation where Mormons, like the wards, like bishops and congregations,
yeah.
There's somebody who's called a ward mission leader who's a member of the church who oversees that the needs of the missionaries are met. And so this ward mission leader might come to the congregation and say, hey, the missionaries have these openings this week to have dinner with mm-hmm. members who can do this.
Yeah.
Well, my mission president said, we do not want missionaries coming to members' houses unless they have somebody interested in the church that's there. So when missionaries are given a budget that you only have a monetary value given to you of $140 a month to pay for groceries, pay for new shoes, pay for haircuts, pay for anything you think you might need to survive for a month, you're giving $140.
Wait, between one person or two people?
One missionary gets $140.
Okay.
So two missionaries have their own expenditures. So you usually have 2 gallons of milk, 2 bags of cereal, 2 bags of bread, you know what I mean? And so you only have $140. And so when the mission president comes out and says, we're not producing the numbers, we need to stop wasting our time with members when people aren't interested. So we don't want missionaries to go to members' houses and get fed when they're not even getting money to feed themselves unless somebody's interested. And so there's 100% this, what else can you sacrifice to get the numbers?
Mm.
And so there are times in, and this is what I was going to go over, is the mission president or the assistants to the president might come out with a mission-wide daily goal and say every companionship needs to go produce 200 baptismal invites today. And you're like, this is Florida. You know what I mean? This isn't like Arizona where every single house is just separated by cinder block walls. A lot of the places are farmlands. And so you might have half a mile till you get to the next house and you may not even have a bike. So how in the world are you going to run into 200 people, hope that 100% of them will listen to you enough to get a baptismal invite out? So imagine the amount of people you have to cover. So the idea was, well, where is there a massive amount of people all the time? The Walmart parking lot. So we would go forced, literally. I hated this, by the way. I absolutely hated this. We would go to the Walmart parking lot, and we were specifically told, you do not go home until you've produced your 200. And so you would be in the Walmart parking lot. Hey, I'm a member of Elder Tate, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We're preparing people to be baptized. Are you interested in learning about the church? They don't even listen to you. Well, at least I said it. Tally mark. Go to the next person. And you're just sitting there, just bouncing between cars, trying to reach as many people as possible because you're trying to produce the numbers.
What time of year is this?
It does not matter.
It's humid.
Yeah.
And you're in a shirt and tie.
Yes. I sweat. Okay, this is not a joke. I sweat so bad that I could take my white shirt off and wring it out into the sink before I threw it in the washer.
And a lot of times, like, God bless them, but they're wearing backpacks too. And if you've ever worn a backpack when it's sweaty,
100 degree weather and 100% humidity.
Oh, it's
no bueno.
No bueno at all.
And so, especially out in asphalt, you know, in the parking lot. So anyways, yes. Like, you know, sure, should you reach out to everybody possible to preach the gospel? Mm-hmm. You know, absolutely. But should you try to stop this woman who has a child in this cart, who's probably sweating, who probably has frozen food? You know, hey, do you want to stop and talk about church? Of course not. Mm-hmm. And so what would happen is we would get kicked out of Walmart parking lots and banned from Walmart, which is really the only place to get food anyways. So now we've basically lost our ability to go shopping at Walmart or even be there in the first place. And then we haven't produced our numbers yet. Mm-hmm. So then we would have to go to, well, I guess we're door knocking and it's 8:30 at night and we haven't got our 200 yet. So we're knocking on people's doors at 8:30 p.m. when people are trying to put their kids to sleep. We're trying to get baptismal invites so that we can get more people baptized to hit our mission goal.
You'd think like ideally it'd be like 5. I would think strategically like 5 p.m. because my dad used to canvas when he'd sell water softeners for all of us.
Yeah.
So,
and wow. So we would be forced. And if missionaries were like, I think this goal is stupid, I'm not going to do it, the zone mm-hmm. leaders would come visit your area and go on what's called splits, where it's one missionary takes one missionary and the other zone leader takes the other missionary, and they split mm-hmm. you off, and so that you're surrounded by somebody who's actually going to enforce this goal. And you go knock on doors until 9 o'clock until you hit mm-hmm. your number. Well, you get the cops called on you. You get different things happening, and this is when one of the times I got a gun pulled on me because I've got a zone leader forcing me to knock on people's doors, and I'm like, they're not going to listen. They're trying to put the kids to sleep, and somebody comes out with a gun and says, get off my property. Zone leader takes off running, and I'm just like, I know he's not going to shoot me. You know right. what I mean? He wasn't like asinine or crazy, but I'm just like, God bless you. Have a good night. And I was just like, can we please be done with this? And anyways, so imagine, the reason I'm getting into this is imagine you have 19-year-old boys, 20-year-old boys who just came out of high school who are told to be an ambassador of Jesus Christ, and they're trying to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And they genuinely think this is the right thing.
Yeah.
And they are being told by these leaders, if you don't go do this, you are not performing your mission correctly. You're not doing things the right way. If you are not a worthy missionary and if you're not willing to serve, imagine the people that you were sent out to go find and you don't find them because you were apostate that day. So imagine now there's that pressure on you that you're like, if I don't go find the person that I was sent out here to go find because I chose not to stay in Walmart for an hour and a half in 100 degree weather when people don't want to talk to me, mm-hmm. then it is now my fault that person doesn't get blessed in the celestial kingdom.
Right.
This is a 19-year-old boys. And so there's this aspect of numbers, baptize. And, you know, there was a situation, I'm going to get into like the baptism that I was telling you about, of the person that was questionably.
Well, yeah, real quickly too, because I mean, there's all of these issues that were coming up where you're this mission presence forcing you to do these things, get numbers, go to Walmart, doing all this stuff, and you're sincere, and now you're going at 8 o'clock, getting a gun pulled on you.
Yeah.
And like there's all this pressure, but that is what led Nielsen at the time, Apostle Nielsen, to come out and talk.
Yes.
So do you want to just jump into that and give
sure.
context
absolutely.
To it? Because I think that's what people have been waiting, because in a sense, like what you're saying is all good, and it's building up to that, because mm-hmm. there was a point where this was the culture of this particular area with all the missionaries being forced to get these numbers via the mission president that led to, at that time, Apostle Nielsen coming out, and he was now the president.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about what he said, and you witnessed this.
Yeah. So, you know, all of this number hungry stuff happened. We did hit our baptismal goal of that year, by the way. But because I was a district leader for a majority of my mission, that would mean that I had direct communication with some of my other companionship's bishops. So if there's a companionship of missionaries for every congregation, that means I listen to all of their bishops, and I'm the one that reports back. And so when I'm a district leader and a bishop comes to me and says, for the year for 2009, we baptized 70 people and only two of them are still coming to church, and they both have a word of wisdom issue.
Right.
Which means they're not worthy for baptism. So people were being thrown into the water just to get the numbers, just so we could say we successed in what we were doing. And then people aren't even coming to church anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other situation that happens is that you start to go to places that are maybe a little bit more rugged. Maybe you go to the projects. Maybe mm-hmm. you go to the trailer parks because you know that may not be the more educated group.
Mm-hmm.
And they might be easier to talk to about the gospel. And so now you're baptizing people who are not worthy, who are still not following the word of wisdom, and at the same time, they need help with their bills. And so there's now other bishops that are saying, I have a massive amount of people that aren't coming to church that are they're asking all the time to help us financially. And we're not getting enough tithing to do this. I don't think these people are sincere that they actually want to be a part of the church. They just want money.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, like I told you, I was a missionary for about a year and 2 months with this first mission president. And then the new mission president came in and there was this final hurrah where the first mission president's about to go home. He has these private meetings with every single missionary to say his goodbyes. And there was this thing where out of nowhere, my mission president knew that I did not like the culture. He absolutely knew that because yeah. I would refute once I got to a point where I didn't have to listen to somebody else. I was working with members. I was asking them if they had friends. I was serving and helping people when their house got hit very close to a tornado. I was the service type of missionary.
Mm-hmm.
Let me come mow your lawn and talk to you about the gospel. I was that kind of guy. Instead of knocking 50 doors a day and getting numbers. Anyways, so mission president knows that I don't like his culture. And out of nowhere, he calls me to be a zone leader, which I'm like, what in the world? Because zone leaders are typically the only people that the mission president actually knows is going to carry out his culture or his ideas and what the mission should do. So I'm like, I know he doesn't like me. And so he calls me in on his last interview. When we say interview, we mean a private meeting where he's talking. Anyways, what he says is that your transfer of missionaries, what he means is all of the 10 missionaries that came out on their mission on the same day that I did, every single one of the guy, well, almost, became a zone leader.
Right.
And he said that your guys' time, because you are going to have the most time with me and you're going to have the most time with this new missionary, it is your job to carry on the culture to this new mission president.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wanted me to carry on the 18, you know, not 18, but 200 baptism invites like in Walmart type of culture. And I was like, no, that's not going to happen. So anyways, he goes home. New mission president comes in. Amazing guy, down to earth, very sincere, very explicitly sincere. I would never say a bad thing about this guy.
Right.
He is very to the handbook. What does the book say? What do the rules say? There's not this like the prior mission president was like, you know, what do the rules say? Well, we're going to go a step above that so we get blessed more. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and so I'm a movie guy, so I'm thinking of Pirates of the Caribbean when they have the Pirate Parlay, and they're like, they're not like rules, they're more like guidelines.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so this new mission president comes in. He has a zone conference, which is just a conference with all 30 zone leaders,
yeah,
which are all 21-year-old boys. I was one of them.
Right.
He has a zone conference, and he says, what are the needs of the mission? What's going on? And I basically harp on, we might go over this in a different episode, but basically what a lesson is discussed as in Preach My Gospel is a sit-down lesson with somebody that's anywhere between 15 and 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my prior mission president was saying, well, I want your, you know, if you talk to somebody at the door for 30 seconds and you're able to say two bullet points of that lesson, you tally it down as a lesson. And then he would come to, mission conferences and he would say, oh, we have companionships that are producing more lessons than the other mission in Georgia combined.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, duh. It's because you're saying that you only have to do so much. Anyways, so there's just a lot of rules. We basically brought it up to this new mission president. He sees and he hears from the bishops that massive amounts of people are getting baptized and really nobody's still coming to church.
Right.
So this mission president comes in and says, we need to stop focusing on new members for a little bit. And we need to start focusing on retention, which is visiting these people who are baptized, who are still not coming to church, and bringing them back into the fold. And his point was, what is the point in baptizing somebody if you are not going to see them in the celestial kingdom? And it's a valid point. Mm-hmm. It's right along with what I was trying to say. Let's get these people actually, you know, interested in being baptized and being a member.
And yeah, so, and I'll just comment too that when you go through the chapters, and we could probably put more content about this on our blog once we debut these episodes, but throughout the My Purpose as a Missionary, and also in the second part when it talks about effective study and how to go through the lessons, mm-hmm. there is what does get brought up continually is the aspect of going through and progressing to getting them to baptize. When's your baptism?
Yep.
That's a big, big thing, and it goes in conjunction with that. So from the missionary's perspective, you have, well, I'm preaching the good news of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm going to get these people baptized, but then from the industrial standpoint, or the machine standpoint, it's these people are going to be baptized and do that sort of stuff. And even like the retention aspect, that's like a business aspect. Like I worked, I don't know if this is a direct comparison, but there were in the credit card industry, like mm-hmm. there's a bank that I worked for, and people who wanted to cancel, for example, people who are members or customers, they wanted to cancel their account. So they get transferred to the retention department to see if they could do anything to kind of keep them around.
They
did keep them a member. Mm-hmm. In a sense, like that's what's happening.
Yeah. And so basically the mission was very confused. All of these missionaries that have been around for a year have been told that I am a successful missionary when I produce numbers. I was sent out to this mission to meet and to teach very specific people. And if there's any situation that I'm not out on the streets or constantly trying to find them, then I am not being worthy of my calling. So there's so much pressure to find the people who is willing to listen to us.
It's like a missionary boiler room.
Yeah, exactly. And so when missionaries start hearing, well, stop door knocking, which is our most effective way of finding people to get baptized, and the whole mission knew that. Stop door knocking and start knocking on the doors of people that are already baptized. Well, missionaries are like, well, I'm going to be spending my whole day doing that. That means I'm not going to be producing the numbers I was producing last year. I don't feel like I'm being successful anymore. I don't feel like I'm being worthy of my mission. And so there's a lot of depression going on. There's a lot of missionaries confused on what they should do. And so the new mission president, which I loved, calls a mission conference and invites a member of the Quorum of the 12, an apostle, to come and preside at this meeting. And this is Russell M. Nelson. This was during the time he was not the prophet yet. Thomas S. Monson was the prophet at the time. So Russell M. Nelson comes in, and what he does is he basically reinforces a couple of things that I loved. I loved what he said at the time. Something kind of twinged with me, and we'll go over that. I know it's the comment you're waiting for.
Yes.
But everything else was what I wanted to hear, is that he basically said that one of the concerns that was going on is that bishops were complaining to the mission president that people are getting baptized who are not really interested in being members. And these people were constantly asking for welfare. You know, I need food, I need help with bills, I need help with my power bill. And it can get burdensome when you have too many people. You know what I mean? They're not paying their tithing, but at the same time they want money from the church. You know, a bishop might not know what to do in that situation. And so the best thing to do is to target the missionaries who are the people who are bringing those type of people in the church. And so, Apostle or Elder Nelson's, one of his first comments is that if you're ever door knocking, you should be focusing on the neighborhoods that are better off. And so what he means by that, I never found the DNC verse that I told you I'd find. I'll try and find it, because we're going to go over tithing in one of the other.
Yes.
Yeah, this is mission culture. These two first episodes are mission culture. Every other episode that we have is going to be over the exact lessons that the missionaries go over, and tithing is one of them. But essentially, Elder Nelson says that missionaries should first target the neighborhoods that they know families are going to be well off, that are not going to need welfare. And so he says, find the people who will uphold and bring a foundation to the kingdom of God. And then after you've done that, go to the people who are poor, for example. And it wasn't that egregious. It wasn't that sharp how he said it that way, but that was the exact connotation that he was basically saying, stop targeting the people that you know are having issues with bills and start targeting the people that you know are not going to have an issue paying their tithing. And once you've done that, once you've covered those streets and those neighborhoods, Then once you've hit all of those, then go to the people that you know might need assistance. And so that was the first thing he did. The second thing, which is the comment you're looking for, is missionaries are feeling like they're unsuccessful because they're not baptizing anymore. They're focusing on retention and getting these people back into church that have already been baptized. And so this has been said twice to me. When I was in the mission training center before I went to Florida, you put your papers in, your papers come back in the mail. They say, hey, Elder Tate, you're going to Florida. Come to Utah for 3 weeks, and then we're going to send you to Florida. Mm-hmm. So you go to Utah for 3 weeks. Well, that's really close to where the apostles live because that's in Utah. So Jeffrey Earl Holland has a massive meeting with everybody in the Mission Training Center. And he basically says, and Elder Nelson reflects this a year later when I'm in Florida. They both say, if the purpose of a missionary, if the key purpose of a missionary is to preach the gospel and get converts, we would not let you do it. We would do it ourselves. So that's the first comment he says. So he diffuses the fact that missionaries feel like I have to baptize, I have to get converts. And then he says, your ultimate goal is to get closer to the Lord, to find a foundation in the gospel, and to get yourself affixed and secured in a place that when you're ready to start your own families or to become an adult, that you already have the foundation you need to do so. And so it's just like Andrew was saying last episode, that this mission is kind of like LDS boot camp. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You come straight out of high school. You're this squirrely guy that plays pranks on people like I did with you. And then you go on a mission, and it's like no TV, no radio, no music, only church music from the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. You can't write people, read emails, do all this stuff unless it's on Monday between the hours of 10 o'clock and 5 p.m., and you just serve your guts out and you put holes in your shoes.
Yeah.
And so President Nelson said that in this mission conference when he came, when my second mission president called him in. Now, the next thing, now, Jeffrey Earl Holland didn't say this. Russell M. Nelson takes it further, and he says that your objective is to solidify yourself in the gospel, but on top of that, you are to focus on your effect that you're going to have on your descendants, your kids, your grandkids. And he says that statistically, it has been proven that a returning honorable full-time missionary, I don't know the right way to say that, but basically you serve for your full 2 years, you don't do anything wrong, you come back honorably, that equals 18 descendants who are temple worshiping tithe payers. That is exactly what comes out of his mouth. So that tells you that the church is statistically looking at membership records, and they must be keeping tabs on who comes home worthily or honorably and who comes home dishonorably. And they have statistics to say that if you come home honorably and serve your full 2 years, that there is a very high chance that you are going to produce, on average, 18 children, grandchildren, you know, so on and so forth, tithe-paying temple worshipers. That's what he says.
I'm still, like, I remember we were out to dinner one time getting burgers at Oso, and when you told me that, for me, like, growing up in the culture and spending tons of time, like, even being out of the temple and talking to Mormons and talking to missionaries.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you told me that, that was almost like that moment. Like I have my laptop that's the screenshot of Morpheus in the Matrix when he's holding up the battery.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, that's incredible on so many levels that they wanted. It's literally like how back in 2008, like 2006, 2007, when real estate was just, I mean, you work in real estate,
mm-hmm.
how big, you know, house flipping was. And in a sense, this is like member, like missionary, how do you flip? You're flipping, missionary flipping in a sense. Like, there was, let's flip them into the fact that they're thinking of someone returning or thinking out generation in regards to people that would pay and tithe and be members. So in a sense, this whole aspect isn't going door to door, it's giving you a unique identity mm-hmm. as someone who's a member of this church. In a sense, there's isolation from the outside world, from your friends and your family are doing this,
yeah,
and the perfectly solidify you in this, in their movement, in the church, and then you go back fully committed as a true believer. And what happens typically after that, at least for the ones, not for the ones who get dumped, but the ones who come back and they have a temple marriage. Now it's reinforced. Now it's solidified.
Yeah.
Now we're ready to go. And you know what's another thing too, I was thinking about too, dude, is that when you're talking about how, about going towards not the poor, not, you know, people that are okay financially.
Yeah.
And we'll deal with the poor secondary. Like, this guy is an apostle. Mm-hmm. This is an apostle of God. And what did James, the brother of Jesus, in James chapter 2, he talks about favoritism. Okay. And this is what is said in James chapter 2. It says, my brothers and sisters, believers in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ, must not show favoritism. Suppose a man comes into your meeting wearing a gold ring and fine clothes, and a poor man in filthy old clothes also comes in. If you show special attention to the man wearing fine clothes and say, hey, here's a good seat for you, but say to the poor man, you stand over there or sit on the floor by my feet, have you not discriminated among yourselves and become the and be, have become judges with evil thoughts? And he just goes on continually talking about this, that you do not show favoritism. Don't make the poor man sit in the back.
Yeah.
Make the rich people sit in the front. But here, he's literally saying, like, as an apostle, now the now God's spokesperson, who claims to be speaking for the Lord, is saying something that's totally, and it should be antithetical. And Christians do this, but that's why this book is there, to counteract what's wrong. It doesn't justify as someone is supposed to be God's spokesperson for the Lord.
Exactly. And something else that's important to talk about is that, you know, if there is any Mormons that come across this blog and they're saying, like, well, what's wrong with tithing? You know what I mean? What's wrong with that concept? We're told to tithe, or whatever the case may be. You know, whatever your idea of tithing is, we won't discuss that now. But think about or consider this, is that have you ever looked on just Google what the corporation of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is? And how many things that they own? How many trades does the church control? And I don't want to necessarily take this massive turn and talk about, you know, the church's use of tithing, but when a comment like this comes out, and then there's the City Creek Mall that comes out, that's a $1.5 billion shopping center. Mm-hmm. And of course the church comes out and says, and I don't really disagree with this either, I'm not calling them liars when they say this, but they're like, well, the City Creek Shopping Center, it's massive $1.5 billion mall that was built in Utah. Tithing money wasn't used for it. It was just used with the church's corporational funds. We paid taxes on it and all this kind of stuff. You just really have to kind of think about, why is the Lord's church even in this business in the first place? Like, why? Like, even if it's not tithing money, just why? Mm-hmm. Because like I told you before, there was a time where I had my first kid and I had to ask for assistance from the bishop to pay a power bill. And I had a very big struggle with coming to the bishop and asking for that, because I had this concept that there are members of the church in third world countries that are sleeping on concrete floors and they are paying their tithing trying to stay worthy. Mm-hmm. So who am I that just has my power turned off to ask for assistance when I have a guy that I know is in who knows where, the Philippines, sleeping on a concrete floor, you know what I mean? And so the bishop basically says to me at this time, well, there are different levels of poor that happen in different cultures. And so you shouldn't feel upset or feel mad that you're asking for assistance when we have people out in other countries that are still paying their tithing that might live in a more primitive lifestyle than you do. Mm-hmm. And so the reason I go over this is that you think about how gaudy and massive their temples are. You know what I mean? How could they downscale that and do more humanitarian? Or what is the purpose for a mall? Or, you know what I mean? There's just this aspect of just money and corporations and the hotels that they own and everything else that happens. And, you know, there's this comment of, you know, it wasn't done with tithing money, but at the same time, well, where did the money come from in the first place? Because when Joseph Smith and Brigham Young were around, you know, people were being asked to donate their properties, to donate their businesses, to donate their trades to the church, to the foundation of the church or the people surrounding it. And that's why they control the sugar. I don't want to say control. I'm really not incredibly knowledgeable around this area, but I mean, just the trades, the radio stations, the sugar industry in Utah, just everything else that they have control over. Well, where did that initiate and come from? And why is the church not transparent with their funds?
Right.
That is the biggest concern that I have. It's just, why are you not transparent?
Yeah. And well, so, another thing too, is that when you look at, when you talk about having favoritism towards people that are not struggling, yeah, and that's something that you witness, and there's independent,
100%,
definitively independent line. And we're not just, it's just hearsay. I mean, God's law states that in order to make an accusation or put something out in the open, there has to be independent lines of testimony, and that's definitively there in our research. One thing too, when you look at where are these temples being placed,
mm-hmm,
location, location, location.
So something that I can promise you is when I was on my mission, Florida, I believe, only had two temples at the time in the whole state of Florida. And there was a new temple being built in, I can't remember. I don't think it was the Orlando temple. I think that one has always been there. There's a new temple being promised to be built at some place. And it was specifically said, if we had more members in this area that were paying their tithing, we could fund the temple.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, it's always on the tithing. You know what I mean? It's, well, where's the tithing being produced? Okay, there's the temple. That's where we're putting it.
Right.
Because then we can fortify the temple worshiping tithe payers that we know we're trying to get out of the missionaries in the first place.
Right. I mean, if you have a community where people are earning $100,000 a year, it converts from that level of community, people make an income like that, versus a community where it's way, the marginal salary,
mm-hmm,
is way less.
Yeah.
There's like, what's the incentive too? And I think that's the thing too. I believe I'll double check on this, but I believe there is the temple that was recently opened up in Oakland, California. And even where it was placed was the extraordinarily nice side of town.
Mm-hmm.
Like where it was placed. It's very nice. It's one of the most prestigious looking temples I've seen that's come up as of recent. But that's another thing to notice as well too.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's something I want to say for either the viewers or the people listening or tuning into the podcast. I absolutely know that there are going to be some Mormons that are screaming at the screen saying, you should pay your tithing. It's a commandment to pay your tithing. It's in the Bible. I promise you, we're going to go over this. We're going to go over all these verses. Right now, we're just talking about the culture of the mission, some things we've experienced. But
mm-hmm,
when we get into section 2 and 3, like lessons 1, 2, and 3, that talk about the commandments, the principles, and even to the Christians, if you're asking, like, you know, as a Christian, how do I discuss this with my Mormon friend or whatever the case may be? This is where we're going to be going over these different lessons and talking about how missionaries get people ready to be baptized and how missionaries tell investigators, is what we call them, investigators of the church, what to prepare for. And tithing is one of them. And so in case you're like, you know, this is all biblical, why are you slamming this or whatever the case may be? Stay tuned. There's going to be a lot of different episodes covering this book. We are still on page 1, really, page 1 through 5 of section 1 of Preach My Gospel, My Purpose as a Missionary. So
right,
there's a lot more to cover.
Yes, and so we actually have to wrap things up here. We could go a whole lot more.
Yep.
we're just barely scratching. Oh yeah, one clarification. I believe the temple in Oakland was a makeover. They kind of like the same way they renovated it. Same thing too with the temple that they're renovating over in Mesa. But one thing actually caught my attention, and this is good. We're going to follow up later and actually dive into the lessons, which I'm really excited for, the real meat and potatoes here.
Yeah.
But this is page 21 of the lessons under effective study. And this is there's a section that says defining words. And I think this is very relevant where So you probably know where I'm going with this. So
yeah,
it says, we have a powerful message with a unique vocabulary, just as a physician speaks differently in the family waiting room than in the operating room. So too, must you learn to speak to those who are unfamiliar with our message can understand what you are teaching. To prepare to help others to understand unfamiliar words, study the list of key definitions and terms in the Ideas for Teaching section with each applicable lesson. Become familiar with the definitions provided. Use approved resources to find definitions for other words. Write definitions in your study journal. Share the definitions with your companion and others to see if you understand. If the definitions aren't clear to others, revise your definitions based on the material you have studied. So, all that being said, this is good because what you see here is that by their own admission, they understand there is a gap between the language that they are using when they talk about Heavenly Father, when they talk about Jesus, when they talk about the Bible. And even when they talk about the celestial kingdom and even things that you see in this missionary manual to the Christian, I know that when they're talking about this, they're speaking in Mormonese. We are literally looking at the same terms and doing that. And that's the thing, too, when you have missionaries come to your door, understand there's an aspect where it is part of this machine, and that's a reality. But they are sincere. But even when they are sincere, when they're talking about Heavenly Father, Jesus Christ, they're meaning very, very different thing. And that's one of the things that Uncle Wally, a.k.a. Dr. Walter Martin, he always talked about scaling the language barrier. So that's one thing we're going to jump into.
Absolutely.
As far as it goes. Is there any last comments you want to make before we wrap things up here?
The only thing I would really say is that, you know, the purpose of these episodes is going to be to introduce Christians, or even to discuss with Mormons that may be listening in or watching this, is to understand the reason why Christians may not believe that Mormons are also Christians. You know, we may say, yes, I believe in Christ. You believe in Christ too. We believe we're saved by grace. So do we. You know what I mean? There's a lot of these, like it just says, unique vocabulary that says it's a certain word, but it means an entirely different thing. But these two episodes that we've dropped right now have just been the culture of the missionary. And so just remember, these are 19-year-old boys. They're trying to do what they think is right. And, you know, as you go through these things, if you get an opportunity to talk to some of these boys, realize that they're 19-year-old boys and they're trying to learn this stuff. And they may not have every answer to every question. But when you get through these episodes with us and we go over lessons 1, 2, 3, 4 and possibly 5, I think we'll go through 5 when we do through 4. But you'll know what to expect, what scriptures they go to, how they charter their discussions with you to kind of take it to where we believe in Father in heaven, and how that gets exponentially taken to a Father God. He's literally our Father and his name is Elohim. Yep. You know what I mean? How to break that barrier, how to scale it, what to understand with missionaries when they sit down with you. That is everything to be expected in the next episodes.
Awesome. Awesome. And yeah, and also just one last thing real quickly is that when we're looking at these issues too, we're not, this is nothing against the Mormon people or the LDS people. I believe they're, like I said, you grew up in their culture. I went to their high school. I went to my friend's parents' house, hung out with them, did stuff with them all the time. I always had these conversations. And so it's not about, we're not trying to attack any particular person's character or against the individual. The ultimate issue when it comes down to these lessons and all part of it. And obviously we're talking about the sociological infrastructure or like the machine part of it to get the converts. But when it comes down to it, we're not against any of them as a person. We're specifically dealing with the theology. What do you say about Jesus? You're making a case that there was an great apostasy. There had to be a restoration of the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a valid case? We, as Christians, the Bible calls us to test all things. So if something that comes up in these lessons doesn't add up with what the Word of God says, if it's the same if any of you guys watching a college football or NFL, we have the right to throw a yellow towel in the field and say, hold on, we're going to challenge the play here.
Exactly.
Basically. And so that's what we're going to do with a bunch of graciousness. So I'm excited to go ahead and jump into further into these lessons. So I'm super pumped for that. Dan, thanks for joining us here today. We're going to jump into it again next time. So if you guys like these first two episodes, hope they're very informative, understanding the very interesting culture and also a little bit of Dan's experience. So all that being said, leave us a review on iTunes or wherever your favorite podcast catcher is. Check out our blog at thecultistshow.com if we add up more additional content over there. And also, there's a lot of production and cost that goes into these episodes. So if you want to go ahead and partner with us, go to thecultistshow.com. You can donate. You can either give a one-time donation or partner with us monthly, and that's always great so we can produce more content. And even sometimes even go on the road. We're getting ready to go up to Utah again soon, at least some of our people from the Cultish team are. So all that being said, thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next time on Cultish, where we enter into the kingdom of the cults. Talk to you guys soon.